Behind every successful man, there is a woman, and usually a strong woman, that pushes energy, allows the male to take that out, and accepts that coming back. If you're in a marriage situation, there has to be the mutual support. If you're a single female or a single male, then you're in a totally different set of circumstances, and all you have to do is begin to work upon yourself. Because the quality of your relationships is intimately linked, is it not, to how strong you are. If you are insecure, first of all, you will pull to you another insecure person. Or, if the other person is not insecure, what you will do is, through your insecurity, you will rattle that small part of insecurity that may be there. So, you can pull to you a strong person, but in every strong person, there's always a little amount of weakness. And your insecurity will reflect their weakness. If you are not honorable, you will pull people to you that are also not honorable. If you do not respect yourself, if you do not work upon your life, making that something disciplined and honorable and holy, a sense of quest, a sense of action, a sense of transcendence, then how would you expect that from your mate or from your husband or from your wife? So as you look at that, you're going to be looking at an absolute reflection of yourself. As we look at this, let me try to explain to you an obscure metaphysical idea, and I would like you at this point to listen carefully because you have to concentrate on it to get it. What gives you life is the tension between two polarities or two different types of energy. In a female, she has within her a positive polarity. And I don't mean positive in the sense of good and bad, just a way of describing the polarity. We say, hey, this type of energy is positive energy, in the same way as you might look at the positive cables of a battery in your car. The inner female, the inner part of her, the divine part, the emotional inner magnificence of a female is positive. Her female body is a negative polarity, and it is the tension between those polarities that grants her life. As you look at that, you can see that there's a difference in the two polarities. Positive energy rolls outwards. It moves outwards and up and away and goes out. The negative polarity pulls inwards. And so she has an inner spirituality that is expressing outwards, that is loving the world, that is caring for it, nurturing it, mothering it automatically and naturally. She has an automatic link with the life force. Her negative polarity body is pulling in. And so those two forces meet in the middle and they create a synapse of energy, like a click of energy, that allows the female to feel a whole person when she's balanced. Her negative body pulls to her energy. So she pulls the male to her. She pulls the babe to her breast. She pulls energy inwards. And she has an automatic completeness. With the positive polarity pushing outwards, the negative polarity pushing in, and the two meeting and creating a lightning bolt of energy within her body, within her life. And she feels secure. She nurtures those holy things. She mothers and cares and supports the world. She is the custodian of the inner light in all things. The male, on the other hand, deals with the exact opposite combination. His inner spirituality is a negative polarity, so it pulls inwards. And so a man is secretive about his inner self. He keeps to himself. He keeps those inner parts hidden away, usually. The male body is a positive polarity, and it expresses outwards. So the male ejaculates outwards. He goes out into the world. He goes out and fights wars. He seeks reassurance of his personality, of the question, who am I, by going out and having the world reflect that to him. The inner spirituality of the male is pulling in, and the outer body is pushing out, and the two polarities are separating from each other. Which is the exact opposite of the female, where the two polarities are coming together in a lightning bolt of energy. And so the male will always have a sense of dissatisfaction about himself, especially if he's a male that is very rooted in the physical plane. If he's very rooted in sexuality, in money, in power, he will have this outgoing enhanced through the actions that he takes, and you have the ingoing very hidden, very underdeveloped, and there is a gap that develops. Inside that gap, the male asks himself the question, who am I? And so what happens is, because he doesn't have the satisfaction of knowing that answer, he does not have that synapse of energy inside of himself, he goes out to seek the answer to that question. And he will say, I am this sports car. I am this sexual relationship. I am this amount of money. I am the acceptance of my mates at the pub or whatever. He will never feel satisfied doing that. And you can watch the average, full, red-blooded male going out into the world constantly seeking an answer to this question. The spiritual male, what he does is he begins to temper the outgoing energy. He begins to temper his sexuality. He begins to get in control of drug abuse or alcohol or whatever ways he uses to get out and away from himself. And he begins to turn that energy round and bring it back. All of the metaphysical or mystical quests or mystical paths always involved meditation, sanctuary, sitting still, like the great Buddhist tradition. That came from an idea of if you could quieten your desires, which are basically outgoing energy patterns or outgoing thought forms, you could bring your energy back and you could experience yourself. And so the whole quest for a male is to turn the outgoing energy around and to bring it back so that it connects with his inner femininity or his inner negative polarity. The way to make that synapse take place for the male is for him to begin to express it. And the way that he expresses it is for him to begin to look at what is in there. What are my motivations? What do I feel? How do I express softness and love and caring for the world? What makes a man strong is not his muscles or his action or how well he plays a game of sports or how well he fights in a battle. What makes him strong is how much of this inner softness he's developed, because it is the inner softness that is the God force, that is the life force, that is where he truly exists. For the female, on the other hand, as long as she maintains balance and she does not take herself out too far into the masculine world, she will always feel a sense of, I know who I am, I have this energy pattern, I have this love, I have this caring. What happens in the world today is that because of advertising, because of modern methods of communications, the females are sold upon a very masculine plan. They're sold upon the fact that they're supposed to be out there, scaffolding erectors, pilots, whatever it is. They've got to go out there and experience the world. And in many ways, that is not a bad thing, because we are here to pick up experiences. But she has to be careful that she doesn't lose her identity. And so often, a female, if she goes out and she's working very hard and she's pushing and she's having fun and traveling and doing a whole bunch of things, she begins to lose a sense of identity. And then she again has to take on the same kind of healing as the male does by creating in her life a sanctuary that she can come back to. And so she needs to take time to get her hair done, to go to a spa, to go swimming, to sit at home and read or listen to some music or study something. She needs to come back within the fold, because her power comes from within as well. Her power comes from this energy inside of her. Interestingly enough, a very powerfully masculine woman that goes out a lot, that has a lot of outgoing masculine strength, that projects the outgoing positive polarity, will invariably pull to her weak men. And this is because she will seek in the men in her life an affirmation of her strength. And so she will look for a person that is weak, that is feeble, that is a bit of a wimp, in order to enhance her power. The wimp male, the weak male, will seek the strong female because he needs that upliftment. It's almost as if he says, well, I'm not much of a guy. I'm this wimp little energy, but I've got this powerhouse of a girlfriend or this powerhouse of a wife, and I can relax. I can have the couch surgically stitched to my rear and let her go do it. She can go out in the world. If there's any problem, she'll fix it. If we need to defend it, she'll defend it. If we run out of cash, she'll get it. And so the weak guy is intensely attracted by the female energy. And so that energy of the lady in her boots and her waistcoat as she plows through the saloon bar and thumps on the bar top and says, give me a beer. That energy for the masculine wimp is a very alluring energy, because he is never going to have to really express himself, and he's never going to have to really come out of himself to be with her. The very dainty, very little, very feminine energy is not attractive to the weak man, because he would have to support her, he would have to defend her, he'd have to work with her. The soft feminine female pulls to her strong men. The name of the game for her then is not to become so feminine and so little and so soft that she loses her identity. But the more a female can become soft, become feminine, and understand that that's where true power lies, the more likely she is going to pull to her a warrior, a strong man, a man that has dedication, a man that has holiness, a man that will complete the relationship and allow the power to go out into the world. These two examples of the overly masculine female and the weak male, or the strong male pulling or being attracted to the feminine female, are a good example of how we constantly look at or we constantly deal with the differences between us. If you can understand that about the other people in your life, you can see that they are dealing with an absolutely different set of circumstances. The kinds of things that scare a male or cause him to have fear and frustration and emotion and negativity are not similar to the female. If you can understand that the female is going to come out of feelings and softness, and the man is going to come out of power, outgoing, intellect, then you can understand that you're living with the opposite polarity. They cannot be like you. It would be impossible and it would be boring. What makes a relationship wonderful is that you're both totally different. What makes it exciting is that both of you have something to bring to the relationship. You do not want to live with a replica of you. You don't want to live with people or interact with people that know the same things as you, because you can't grow that way. The whole neat thing about relationships is that you can get from the other person something that you do not have. And then if you recall when we were talking about giving that other person space, you have to give them space to be what they are. And so if he wants to go off and play with his mates on Saturday afternoon, you have to allow him that space. If she wants to sit in the garden and talk about her emotions and her feelings and the colors and the softness and the wind rippling through the trees, you have to allow her to do that. And so as you look at relationships, you understand that there is a difference and there always will be. And if you honor that difference and make it special, it grows. If you try to convert the other person to your lifestyle, your philosophy, your modus, you're only going to pull them away from where they are. They will lose their identity, their purpose in life, and they will hate you for it. So many relationships begin to develop like that. You are excited with each other, you meet at a dance, and, oh, that person's so lovely, they're so interesting, they're so fantastic, and the relationship develops, and bit by bit, if the other person is weaker than you, you mold them into your lifestyle, and suddenly they're you, and suddenly there's nothing fresh and new and exciting, and you hate them, and the relationship falls apart. And so as you understand this difference in the polarities, you can understand why people go through what they go through. Why, in a general sense, females deal with feeling and emotion, and why males deal with action and intellect. And in the same way as action and intellect can become incredibly boring, intuition or feelings and emotion can also become incredibly boring. But when you mix the two, you have another synapse of energy, another lightning bolt of energy. In the same way as if the male can turn his outgoing energy inwards, he creates this power. If the female can sustain that synapse of energy, that quantum of energy that she has naturally, she keeps her power. And then both of you bring to the relationship two molecules of energy that heighten each other. You help her grow, she helps you grow. And both of you begin to climb. In order for that climbing process to take place, you have to have communication. You have to have an understanding. Because you don't understand. And the only way you're ever going to understand what the other person actually is to talk to them. And so when you're in a loving relationship, or as you're trying to create a loving relationship, no matter what type of relationship you're in, the communication part is absolutely vital, because you can't read their mind. And so you have to have periods of time for healing the relationship, for sustaining the relationship. It's much like you have to go service the car. Otherwise, eventually, it's bound to break down. And so as you take time out from the world affairs that you were involved in to talk to your mate or to talk to your lover or to the members of your family, you can find out what their difficulties are. And as you talk through those difficulties, they're released. If you can't bring to a relationship honesty and communication, then the whole relationship is lost. And isn't it true that most relationships are a pack of lies? They're both people pretending that they like it, or it's both people pretending that it satisfies them when it doesn't. And yet it's so easy for you to just explain to the other person what it is you want. You are a child of the universe. You're an infinite spark, and you have imperfection. And so you can bring to that relationship the imperfection, and you can say, look, I know I'm totally lousy at taking out the dustbins, and I'm lousy at getting the car fixed, but look, I'm really good at computer programming. I like going to the beach with the kids, and those are the things that amuse me. And you can begin to develop a lifestyle with your partner or with your mate that enhances and supports both of you. So often, one person has to give up themselves for the other. And it isn't supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be a lifestyle where you both get to be everything that you want to be. And so if you want to go dancing, and your mate wants to go to the Chinese restaurant, you go to the Chinese restaurant, and then you go dancing. And if your mate doesn't want to go dancing, you have this lovely, romantic, and wonderful dinner at the Chinese restaurant, and you allow the other person to go dancing. Because there's honor, because there's security in the relationship, you don't have to worry about what they're doing. And if there isn't honor, if there isn't security in the relationship, then again, you're going to talk about it. And you're going to say, look, it's all very well you going dancing, but that makes me feel insecure because you have a repeated pattern of not coming home till dawn, and you have lipstick on your collar, and that makes me feel that you don't love me and that you're not in this relationship. And then you have the other person talk about what do they need, and you may find out that they have all sorts of needs that they are fulfilling outside of the relationship because they haven't communicated inside of it and got what they want. For you to concentrate upon yourself, for you to get what you want in life, is not wrong. And the whole of society teaches us that we're supposed to think about everything else other than ourselves. We're supposed to support everything else, keep everything else up, keep the charities up, keep everything going other than ourselves. If you will turn and concentrate upon yourself, and it doesn't have to be an egotistic energy, you become stronger. You begin to get clear about, hey, what do I want? And you begin to get clear about which parts of the relationship frustrate you and which parts of it are fun and loving and exhilarating. And you design for yourself a lifestyle that gives you as much of the exhilaration and joy as possible and as little of the frustration as possible. And then you talk to your mate and you find out what keeps them happy. And both of you support each other for maximum exhilaration, maximum ecstasy, maximum fulfillment as individuals. The reason that so many people die of grisly diseases is because they create for themselves a prison, and then the inner spirit begins to literally wane, it begins to die off, and finally it says, crikey, if I can't resolve this marriage, I think I might as well just develop an exotic disease and check out of it, because it's the only gateway out. But the freshness can be so easily put there if you will feel comfortable by exposing who you are to the other person, by telling them what you actually feel. And if you can come from loving yourself, then you can establish your own forgiveness. And that is critical to your growth and your understanding of life. When you understand that your transgressions, your weaknesses, places where you've been less than honest or less than faithful or less than honorable, are just a part of your greater learning, you can pull out of the emotion of that, pull out of having an opinion about that, and you can forgive yourself. You can say, well, I'm going as fast as I can. I made a tremendous mess of that, but now I'm a new person and today is another day. You cannot forgive your loved one. You cannot become magnanimous to your loved ones unless you have created that forgiveness for yourself. Because how can you forgive them if you feel guilt inside yourself? And so that whole process of forgiveness is only a matter, again, of detaching from the emotion. If your loved one has done something that you consider evil or bad, or they've let you down in some way, you have to be able to say to them, I forgive you of that. And it has to have no energy in it. It has to have no implied owing. So often we say to people, well, I forgive you, but, and then the but is 1,000 different things. The forgiveness has to be unconditional. It's like, I forgive you, I understand where you're going. Obviously, if your partner continues to repeat the same actions that cause you to react, or actions that are less than honorable, less than correct in your view, then eventually you're going to have to make the decision about whether you want to be with that person. And in all loving relationships, you have to first look at whether or not they nurture you. Does this relationship nurture me? Does this relationship support me? Does this relationship help me become a more creative, loving, free being? If it doesn't, then you're going to go into the communication section and try to change it to where it does support you. If you can't change it, then obviously you're going to vote with your feet. We come together as humans for growth, not for life. The holy books that said, "Let no man put asunder, come together till the end of your days," were written at a time when the life expectancy of a human being was just 22 years. And so you came into puberty at the age of 11 or 12, and you had 10 years of life. The maximum marriage could last in those days was 10 years. And so when people talked about a lifelong partnership, they were only talking about 10 years, you know, 3,650 days. Nowadays, when we have many couples that are together up into their 90s and even up into their hundreds, you're looking at a whole different prospect. But we also have a tremendous amount of knowledge with which to deal with this extended relationship. Whereas in the olden days, they had very few psychological, emotional terms. They didn't have communication that we have today. And so as you look at that, you can understand that the whole key to this interpersonal thing is for you to become real, for you to move out of the ego and the personality and opinion and to drift back to your inner self, whether you're female or male, and become real, become true to yourself. You only are what you are. You can't be something else, and you can't act for the benefit of others or to try to please them. You have to act for your own spiritual growth. And if you don't have that concept in your life, then that's one that you have to lace in there and lace in there quickly. If your life isn't a quest, it becomes humdrum, it becomes drudgery, it becomes just rolling out to work at 9, coming back at 5. It's this humdrum existence. There has to be a sense of dedication, of quest, of a higher ideal, some kind of relationship to the God force, in whatever spiritual, philosophical, or religious terms you may want to translate that into. But there has to be meaning to life. And that meaning has to have in it patience. It has to have in it magnanimousness. The amount that you can grow as a person, the amount that you can become spiritually, is directly linked to how much you can open. How vulnerable can you become? How magnanimous can you become? It is simple to be magnanimous and kind to people when they're treating you in the way that you want them to treat you. But can you be magnanimous to somebody if they rip you off in some way? Or can you be magnanimous to somebody that doesn't treat you the way you want to be treated? The whole trick is to be able to expand yourself to allow the world to be. And that is the greatest gift that you'll ever give to another person. The greatest love that you can give to another individual is to accept them, respect them, and allow them to be what they want. And of course, that means that you create the same for yourself. Whenever there is emotion in the relationship, whenever there is difficulty, that is just a sign for you to begin to work upon yourself. So you're involved in jealousy. You can see that your jealousy is not created by the actions of your partner. It's created from the insecurity within you. And that's a whole different place. You can impose upon your partner 1,000 restrictions which will perhaps help to cure the jealousy. But jealousy is actually a reflection of your own insecurity. Once you know who you are as an individual, once you can come into a loving acceptance of self, a loving forgiveness, then you develop a security. When asked the question, "Who am I?" the inner self says, "I know who I am. I am what I am. I'm not perfect, but what I am has beauty and strength." And then all of a sudden, the anger, the difficulty, the emotion doesn't have to be there because you feel secure. When you don't feel secure, then you're going to allow those situations to impinge upon your life and to pull you dramatically out of position. Once you have that inner security, then what you can do is you can begin to align the values that are important to you into the relationship. And first of all, obviously, you have to impose those values upon yourself. Values of morality, honesty, action, right action. Values that deal with bringing up children, the way you relate to the business world, or how you obtain finances or money or whatever that may be. But you have to have a system or a code of honor. It doesn't need to be so rigid that you can't move, but it has to be part of your dedication. So often we impose 1,000 regulations upon ourselves, do we not? You go into a home, and there's almost a list by the door. You can't do this, you can't do that, you got to do this, you got to do that. And I know I used to have that in my household, and there was always a conflict about the bathroom towels. And I come from a philosophy that says that bathroom towels incarnate to be on the floor. It's a natural place for them. They like lying down, they like being with their mates there. It's a convenient place, and when you come home at night, you know where they are, they're on the floor. My wife comes from a philosophy that bathroom towels are supposed to hang off little rings like acrobats. And so there was always a conflict between these two religious points of views. The one point of view that says the towels are fine on the floor, and the other point of view that says the towels have to hang off rings like little acrobats. Well, of course, neither of these two views could ever be reconciled. And then one day we got to communicate about it, and we discovered that we had two bathrooms. We had missed that somehow in our daily life because of maybe all of the arguments about the towels. And so I retreated to my bathroom, where all the towels are comfortable upon the floor, and she retreated to her bathroom where they all hang off the little rings like acrobats. If by chance I have to use her bathroom for some reason, I honor her decision to have the towels the way they want, and when I finish, I hang them up like little acrobats. If she comes to my bathroom, she's happy to throw her towel on the floor. It's just a simple method of coming to a common ground. And within the rules and regulations, you have to have fluidity. What I think's important about aligning values is that it doesn't become a code that no one is allowed to break. And isn't it true that when you go into those homes that have 10,000 things in them, you can't even sit on the couch because you're afraid of breaking something, and everything's little prim and it's proper, and it's all little rules, and the tea's served at 4, and the bell rings at 5, and the paper comes at 3, and it's a prison. I think as you develop a lifestyle, you have to look at your home, look at where you live, and say, hey, does this support me? Is it fresh? Is it healing? Is it sanctuary? Is it entertainment? Is it rest? Or isn't it? And if you have thousands of regulations, of course it isn't. But that doesn't mean that you cannot lace into your life a sense of code, a sense of honor, a sense of values. Things that you try to be a part of, they're like affirmations. Hey, I'm going to deal honorably with the people in my life in relation to money. Hey, I'm going to deal honorably in my relationship with my children, and we're going to sit around and discuss what we actually want. In relationships with my aunts and uncles and my friends, we're going to have friendship, we're going to have giving, but we're also going to make sure that there's receiving, that it's not just a one-way street. For the ego, the personality constantly seeks acceptance. It does so because it's part of its defense mechanism. And the defense mechanism of the personality or the ego says, if I do these things for you, will you love me? If I give you my life, will you love me? If I give you money, will you love me? If I do the washing up, drive the kids to school, do this, do that, will you love me? And again, it's the same process of you as an individual seeking the approvals of others. Whether they love you or not is nothing to do with you. If they do love you, it's a joy, it's a gift, it's a jewel that you have for yourself. If they don't love you, allow them not to love you. Allow yourself to be secure that you are what you are, you accept yourself, and you feel comfortable with that. For in the end, there's only you. There's only you allowing yourself to be what it is you want to become. And whether that is in sexual relationships, or whether that is in your religious or philosophical or spiritual alignment, or the interpersonal relationships or finances, in the end, there's only you. You come into the physical plane to discover about yourself. You may be with 100 people, 500 people, 1 million people, but in the end, you are an individual. You're coming through the physical plane to get the most that you can out of it, and to put as much as you can back in. And that is the reason for interpersonal relationships, and that is the reason for living. Once you can understand that, once you have that securely inside of yourself, then you can be an individual and part of a family. And beyond that family, a part of organizations, corporations, churches, whatever it is. But in the end, you have to have that dedication to your own personal quest. As you begin to grow spiritually, you can allow that other person that is with you to grow spiritually as well. And if it gets to the point where you grow very much more than them, then perhaps the relationship is over. Because again, remember, you come together for growth. You don't come together for life. Loving relationships is one of the greatest gifts that you can impose upon others, that you can give to others, and that you can receive from them. It is how we actually experience our true spirituality. If you will go into your life and you will look at what is good in your life, and honor that, and raise statues to the strengths, and begin to go beyond the weaknesses. You can't go past weaknesses by concentrating on them, by working on them. When you concentrate upon a weakness, it actually becomes bigger. It's a bit like your body. If you have a sickness and you think about the sickness, you actually become more sick before you can heal. The way you create this powerhouse of energy in your life is to make the strong points stronger, to support yourself and to support your loved one. As you look at your life, you're going to need an action plan. You're going to need an action plan to change those pieces that you don't like. That action plan must always come out of what do you need for yourself. You go into a situation and you say, do I have freedom in this relationship? Do I have freedom in this job? Do I have freedom in this love affair? Do I have freedom in this family interpersonal energy that we have here? If you don't have freedom, you need to create it. If you look at the situation and you feel it's manipulative, then you need to back out of it and change it. If it's you manipulating others, then you need to look at the insecurity within you, the inability to communicate within you that is causing you to have to manipulate them. If they are manipulating you, then obviously you have to put a stop to that. And that means communicating to them in a loving way. When you criticize people, when you get angry with people, when you push energy at them, they will only back off. They have to, as a kind of psychic protection. When you talk to somebody, you have to come almost like a mole burrowing up from underneath. You have to put ideas that are more holy or more wonderful or express more light into their consciousness and allow them the space and time to make them their ideas. If you attack people, they back away. But there's a way of putting things where you can put it diplomatically and you can say, look, I loved the dinner. I thought it was marvelous. But wouldn't it be neat if the vegetables were not boiled for 9 hours? You know, I saw a salad the other day in a little salad bar and it was fresh and green and red, and wouldn't it be fun to try salad? And that's a way of saying, hey, let's change what we're eating without making the other person wrong. As you can understand that, and as you can bring non-judgment and non-criticism, then all of a sudden you have the ability to heal your life. You have an ability to come to this transcendence inside of you, beyond restriction, beyond manipulation, and to the absolute freedom that is your heritage. For the quintessence or peak of humanhood is for you to become fluid, to become free, and to feel so secure inside yourself that you can open to love the world. And what will heal our planet in the end is love. It is the only energy that is eternal and consistent in all things. And when you can align to that, then you can give the world the gift of who you are. Thank you.